Coaching as Benevolence, a podcast for people who are curious about using coaching for self-development. I'm Erin with Roots and Wings Grief and Loss Coaching.
And I'm LaShawn with Michelle Sage Place Positive Intelligence Coaching. Today, we are going to be talking about stress. April is the National Stress Awareness Month. And although we are in the second week of April, no time like the present to talk about stress. I don't know about our listeners, Erin, but I am just feeling like everything is accelerating and things are just so happening so quickly. There's so much going on. And so stress levels can be really high, especially at this time of year with change in seasons. You know, we had Easter at the end of March and then some other things going on. So this is a great time, I think, to talk about healthy ways of managing stress and how stress shows up, how we can be aware when stress becomes too much, and what we can do to calm ourselves down and to manage our stress. So Erin, what comes up for you when you hear the word stress and you know, managing stress? What are things that you think of?
I have struggled with stress throughout a lot of parts of my life. And it wasn't until I moved to Colorado where I took some time to really understand what was going on internally for me with stress. At one point I had an ulcer, and another point I was just feeling so fatigued, I thought I might have had a different illness. But I do think a lot of that was all due to compounded stress over the years that I had not dealt with until finally I, you know, really didn't just need to deal with it. So stress has been a big part of my life in that way. And now, you know, fast forward about 13 years later, and stress for me is a different, I carry it a lot different than I used to. I am better at recognizing it in myself, better at recognizing what causes me stress, keeping in mind that might shift from day to day or throughout the year. And so when I think of stress, that's one of the things that I really want people to know from a coaching perspective is that, you know, really consider what are your key stressors and how do you typically respond? And if you aren't sure, ask people, ask your intimate family members, partners, and try to really gauge what's going on for you in that way. Because yes, we do have research about stress and what stress does to the body and aging and to, you know, various genders and different things like that. But at the end of the day, each of us also have a very individualized experience with stress that can be grappled with at that level. And then that way strategies can be more aligned with their specific needs. So those are some of the concepts that come up for me. One, my own personal experience. And then two, just an individual being able to have their own time to understand their own stress and how it's showing up for them and any changes they'd like to make. Well, Sean, does stress show up for you and how does it show up?
Yes, stress shows up for me. I notice when I am overwhelmed and stressed out, I wring my hands. So I'm like, okay, I'm wringing my hands. That's an indication that things are a little overwhelming and that I'm under stress. So let me, you know, sit down and, you know, check in with my body, see what's going on there. And then eating is also a thing for me. I do eat. I tend to focus on sweets and comfort food when I'm stressed. And that to me is an indication. Oh, okay. So you want that cookie. It's not just that you want a treat, but maybe there's something going on. Maybe you're suppressing some unpleasant emotions or, you know, so what's going on? Why are we feeling like we need to self-soothe in that way? So how can we soothe in a more healthy way? So I'm glad that you brought up that we all have different ways of dealing with stress and reacting to stress. It's important to be aware of that in order to, like you said, come up with ways, alternative ways to cope with stress. And I would argue that we have what I call default coping mechanisms that may not be as healthy as we would like them to be. And I think that being aware of certain coping mechanisms that we might have that no longer serve us is a good start. And you mentioned asking your loved ones, people who see you on a daily basis, who can lovingly and compassionately tell you when you get stressed out, you get really irritated. And you have a tendency to kind of get short with other people, where people can tell you, hey, you know, this is something that is an indication that maybe you might be overwhelmed or that you might be experiencing high levels of stress. So I really think that's really important to start with, where does stress show up in my life and how can I implement, if needed, coping strategies that will be healthful and healthy and will help me maybe even get to a point where I can be more resilient about stress, where certain things that are stressing me out now later may not stress me out so much, especially if you can get ahead of it and you can be aware, okay, so when I've got lots of deadlines at work, I tend to get stressed. So how can I manage it so that these deadlines that are coming up at this particular time of the year, how can I manage it so that I don't get stressed out? What can I delegate? What can I do differently the next time this happens, where I can kind of manage my stress a little bit better and be aware of this part of the year or this task that I have to do that causes me more stress than others? Erin, any thoughts?
I like how you framed that last piece on being proactive and looking ahead at your calendar and doing those sorts of proactive tasks that might help you in the future. Sometimes that can be incredibly helpful because you feel like you have more control of the situation when you're planning ahead in that way. On the flip side, it can also be a stressor for some people because they feel more stressed that they are not doing something like that. And so really helping people understand that it's trial and error and there will be failure and mistakes with this process of trying to find things that work for you and your stress. And if you keep sticking with, you know, that planning ahead or keep looking ahead in that way, it will start to become, you know, more ingrained in your day to day and more of a habit for yourself. So I think one thing as you're talking, like, these strategies work. We know, like, when you do those types of things, they work. And people just need to really hold their, as we're learning actually recently in positive intelligence with LaShawn, thank you, their judge, right? Hold their judge kind of off to the side, that inner voice that's maybe being critical of them if they mess up, or if, you know, maybe let's say they're really working on their stress response and one day they kind of, you know, blow up or react in a way that they did not want to, instead of really listening to that inner critic and really feeling a lot of shame around that mistake or that failure, asking yourself, you know, what's going on for you in that moment that led to that? Is there something that you could shift in the future, you know, moving forward? And sometimes we just do those things, right? We're human, we make mistakes. And so how can you be compassionate toward yourself and really tend to your needs of what's going on for you internally that's led to that as well? So just like all the other concepts we've talked about throughout the podcast, this is a complex one, right? Because it includes both our internal responses and then our external strategies and the people around us and, you know, what's going on at work, what's going on in society, what are the bigger societal ills that might be swimming around as well. And so I think compassion always comes back to mind for me when I think of something like stress. I don't love the word management, like stress strategies, those types of things. And just being really gentle with yourself as you try to make any shifts that you might consider. So that's where I head with the compassion piece. And I think the compassion piece for me is so strong right now because I am kind of trying to establish a new habit as well. And trying to do that, I'm noticing quite a bit of failure before I've had even one small win. So just, you know, keep moving with it. And at one point too, it's like, at one point, maybe are you addressing something with your stress that maybe you should hold off to the side and address something differently? And so these questions are very personal. And again, these are the types of questions that come up with in coaching through that creative and collaborative process to help people understand, you know, how they want to address stress and how it's showing up for them.
You brought up a lot of really good points. One of them was, thank you for mentioning positive intelligence, because one of the things that I remember from the training that I did, and also one of the things that we do with stress with positive intelligence, is we understand that you can't talk your way out of stress. You can't talk your way out of a stress response. Like if you are reacting to something, you know, overwhelm, upset, anger, anything like that, it's coming through. In positive intelligence, we know that you need to shift your focus or shift the region of the brain that you are, that's active. So in positive intelligence, there are two regions of the brain. We call it the saboteur region and the sage region of the brain, where calmness, positive feelings, thinking, where you can access those things easily. And anytime that you are in a stress response or you're feeling upset, angry, overwhelmed, anything like that, it's very difficult to access good feeling thoughts or good, you know, feelings. So, and that's fine. It's part of, you know, the human experience to experience that range of emotions. That's really important for us to be aware of how we're feeling, because that is a sign of instability. It's a sign that there's something that you need to pay attention to. So that's something that I'm actually grateful that I have, you know, the ability to understand, oh, there's something that I need to pay attention to. So let me do that. And one of the ways that we do that is through like mindfulness exercises, paying attention to the breath, activity, getting active, going for a walk, going out in nature. Those are some things that you can do to respond to stress. One thing that it's difficult to do is if you respond to stress with logic, thinking, reasoning, it can actually cause more stress for you. So just doing something else that's going to allow you to have access to, you know, the part of your brain that can easily feel or experience positive emotions, even if it's just neutral, is really important. So it's easier to respond to stress through other channels than thinking or talking in that moment when you're stressed. Now, if you're in a good mood, or you're, you know, at a coaching session and you're like, okay, so the other day I'm revisiting this moment when I had a panic attack or where I was really stressed and I yelled at my kid, I really want to address that and see what I can do differently, how I can respond differently. That's something definitely you can think. But when you're actually experiencing the effects of stress, I find that an alternative to calming yourself down is through breathing or through, you know, taking a walk or maybe just taking a break if you can, if it's possible, so that you can disrupt that reaction that you're having to the stressful situation. Any thoughts, Erin?
I like how those strategies are accessible typically wherever you are, you know, within the day at whatever given point. And I think that that is another just kind of thing to keep in mind, is what is accessible to you in the moment. I know you're not going to disrupt the stress completely, right? You're not going to change that response in that big moment, but there is a way to disrupt it with those strategies that you talked about. So I really like how you tied those to a way to disrupt the stress in a gentle way, in a calming way. And then on top of that, it's like doing that and also having those bigger, you know, self-reflection opportunities outside of those stress moments and really listening to yourself. I sometimes think stress is because we aren't listening to ourselves. And so how do we listen to ourselves better? Is it a matter of going inward? Is it a matter of being in appreciation of something? There's so many ways for us to better get in touch with ourselves. And LaShawn already listed a few of those too. But really just how are we listening to ourselves? And recognizing that sometimes there are different types of shifts that are going to be made, right? So you have the strategies you can access that are more in the moment, but what can you do further out? You know, do you need to switch career or jobs? Do you need to take a bigger break somewhere? Do you need a smaller break? You know, I think gathering your team of support with a coach, counselor, friends, whomever, and really grappling with these things that you might be listening to now that you've heard from your inner voice, how are you kind of looking at those? And taking a and kind of making your mind shift around those bigger changes. If you feel like a bigger change is needed, instead of it feeling so daunting, maybe it can feel like an adventure, or maybe it can feel like a healthy strategy. And then breaking that down into really small, you know, micro level steps to move into that bigger shift and that bigger change. And that feels daunting too, even when it's broken down into small steps. But that's where I think that going back to that compassion piece and then going back to that team piece can really be helpful. Who can help you do this? How can you do this together? And, you know, as you continue to listen to yourself, I think that grows that skill and just one's own purpose in life. And that brings greater awareness, not only, you know, with the stress that you're dealing with, but just in general of like who you are, who you want to be, how do you want to be in the world? These bigger values-based questions that inform so much of our lives. And so again, I know just even from personal experience, when I'm not listening to myself, stress can just get even that much more intense. Yeah, LaShawn, I know you're, you know, very skilled with positive intelligence. And have you in your personal life looked at a way that it relates directly to like a small stress or a big stress experience and how you've used it?
With positive intelligence, it's we're all about mental fitness, and mental fitness is very similar to physical fitness. And I mean, if you think about training your body, so if you're training your body just to be strong and resilient on a regular basis, then if something big happens, so for example, let's say you're training your body to be strong, you're doing strength training, you're eating well, you're really taking care of yourself. And then let's say you get sick. And if your immune system is stronger, if you have those healthy habits before that sickness comes in, you might recover faster. If you break a bone or something, if you have that strength training and you have that foundation of health, then you're going to recover faster than someone who doesn't. And that's the same with mental fitness. With mental fitness, it's really about laying a foundation, a strong foundation, so that you can be resilient when things get big. One of the things that we do daily is what we call PQ reps, which is basically mindfulness exercises and guided meditations that run from 2 minutes to 12 minutes. And if you do a guided meditation for 2 minutes every day, you're strengthening your muscle. It's like going to the gym and doing those strength training exercises. If you do a longer PQ rep session, is what we call it, where you're doing 5 to 12 minutes, you're really strengthening your muscles and, you know, fully charging that part of your brain that has greater access to positive thinking, positive feelings, calm, clear focus, that kind of thing. You're strengthening the neural networks that go to that part of your brain. And you're doing that on a regular basis so that you're strengthening those connections. And that's essentially what we do in positive intelligence. That's what mental fitness training is. So you lay the foundation and then you're able to get in the habit of doing that. Just like going to the gym, you get in the habit of going to the gym. And just like if you've taken a long time or you've never gone to the gym and you've never, you know, really thought about your body and what you put into your body until you start to see the negative effects of putting just whatever you want into your mouth and into your body or not having regular activity, you realize, oh, I need to do something different. It's going to take time and it's, you know, going to take patience and grace. So with stress, if you have little stress and you have those moments in the day with mental fitness where you're focusing on yourself and you're accessing the PQ region of your brain, you can handle stress a little bit better and support yourself better against the negative impacts of stress. And as you do it more and more and more, it gets easier and easier and easier to deal with different levels of stress, just like weights in the gym. You know, you got the 2 pound weight and then you got the 10 pound weight. You know, you got to use the 2 pound weight a little bit more and then you can, you know, gradually make your way to the 5 pound weight and then the 10 pound weight, but it takes time. It's the same with positive intelligence and with stress. So the more that you work on your mental muscles, the easier it is for you to handle different levels of stress. And different levels of stress require, you know, different resistance and strength. And sometimes your stress can be so much and you haven't developed your muscles enough to lift that 50-pound weight, and that's okay. Beating yourself up only adds to the stress. And I want to come back to what you said before, Erin, about being patient with yourself and being compassionate. That's really important when you are adding a new routine or you are handling something bigger than yourself. That's where you come in and you ask for help. We tend to isolate ourselves when we need community the most. So one of the things that I would encourage our listeners to do is, even when you're feeling like, oh, I'm just not my best person right now, I do not want to be around other people because they're not going to like me or it's not going to be a good experience. If you have loved ones and people you trust, that is the time when you turn to them and say, I'm really overwhelmed. I'm having a hard day. I'm having a hard week. I'm having a hard month. I'm having a hard year. I just need support. And that can be difficult. I know that can be really difficult. Erin, do you have any suggestions on how people can reach out and ask for help?
Yes, that's a good question and a difficult one, depending on what people are used to when it comes to asking for help. Some people can be very individualistic kind of in their way of actualizing their goals. And that can often work for them. They have a very laser sharp focus and they believe in themselves and they know that they'll make the goal happen. And yet they still might have a lot of stress. So if they've been trying stress strategies that haven't really worked for them, it may be worth expanding that network and being vulnerable and being okay with saying, I need help. And everybody needs help. Everybody needs help. And so recognizing that that is just part of who we are as humans can be a good first step to going and accessing the help you want and need. Also, for people, it might differ. It might be a coworker, it might be a partner, it might be a friend, it might be a therapist or a coach, or it might be, you know, somebody else. But sometimes knowing who to go to first can be a challenge as well, especially like you have brought up in the beginning. If you're like in that high stress moment, you can't really get out of that till you have that locus of control and you have that calm and that ability to soothe yourself. So that has to happen before you can, you know, really reach out to somebody. But I think this can be really hard too, because, you know, there are different parts of our lives that might need different support from different humans. And so we might reach out to someone and be like, well, that wasn't helpful. Or we might reach out to someone and be like, I wasn't expecting that to be so helpful. You know, we just don't always know. So I think one can ask themselves a few questions. One, you know, what type of support am I seeking around this stress? Two, who probably could best fulfill that support, you know, for me? And three, you know, whom else can I ask, right? Like there's always someone else to connect with as well. And recognizing too, it's not just about asking for help, but you provide help to others in the same way. People are asking themselves those questions about you as well. And they're calling you or reaching out to you for help too. So sometimes having that space of being the person who has that reciprocity, who is being asked for help, that can lead to more asking of help sometimes too, or just more awareness of like, okay, I see how this feels. I can also ask for help and feel comfortable for help. So I really focused in on an example about someone who typically doesn't ask for help and typically might be a high achieving, but stress is just all consuming. So that's one example, but there are so many other examples when we think about how people can access help and ask for help. And sometimes there's a roundabout way too, right? Like, hey, I know you went and saw this person. Can you tell me about what it's like to go, you know, to that professional or something like that? So even just starting to ask those small questions that can lead to the actual access of help. LaShawn, what else would you add here?
I think you made some really good points about, again, this comes up a lot, like the person and the individual, how the individual, what is going to be well received for the individual? What's going to be comfortable for the individual? So I think that's really important as well. Then you branched out to talk about how we as a community can see how a person might ask for help or not be able to ask for help, and how we as a community or a friend or a sibling or an adult child can respond to someone who we perceive to be in trouble as far as stress or overwhelmed with stress. I'm trying to think of a good word for this, but, and again, it does bring to mind the complexity of stress and how stress shows up in different ways, how one can find healthful coping strategies, and how important it is to be self-aware, and how important it is to be compassionate. So those things were all very, I think, really good points that you made while you were talking about asking for help. And I'm going to shift gears a little, because one thing that came up is you have mentioned positive intelligence, and I have a lot of knowledge about that and the framework that we use dealing with stress. And I wonder, how does stress, you being an expert in grief and loss, how does stress show up in grief? Is it different from everyday stress? And how would one know one is being affected by stress when they're grieving?
Yes, I think in grief and loss, stress might show itself differently. And there might be some similarities in terms of like the roots of stress, like the certain personality of the individual, as well as their typical coping strategies. But what I have tended to see in grief and loss is that stress can kind of expand because there are new responsibilities associated with the loss, or there are more heightened feelings associated with the loss. And so stress can be something that goes beyond the word stress to something that is overwhelm. On the other end, it can also go to underwhelm. You can start when we go through a shock experience at the initial, just like phase of finding out something that is substantially changing our lives. Sometimes we go to numbing because that's what shock does to us. So at the beginning, we might see a little bit of that underwhelm and stress, like, wow, I'm not sweating as much as I usually do. You know, that kind of thing. Why is that? On the other end, that's not always the case for everyone. You might see at the, when they first find out the news and in the following weeks and months, this overwhelm, this stress that is so, has no way to be contained, right? And so all the coping strategies that were used before aren't working. All of the self-awareness is not working because, as we know, our brain is changing. So we're changing in grief and loss. So it's like, wait, that used to work for me and now it's not working for me. So it gets very complex, and that's just in the few months, you know, after an event, but, you know, even looking further out, right? And I think giving that time and grace and allowing that to be is okay. The goal is not necessarily to make your stress 100% better. It's to just be able to take care of yourself at the most basic level sometimes. And then we can move into more coping strategies and more self-awareness and those sorts of things. So that's how I've seen it show up in grief and loss. And, you know, the other thing is too, everybody deals with grief and loss differently. And so maybe their stress level maintains and there isn't a shift, there isn't a change. So I'd say just ask yourself, you know, what's going on with my stress, and just kind of be in tune with yourself. And the other piece is, if you're on that stage of like overwhelm and that piece, really accessing that communal support and that community support that tends to really show up in that time of grief and loss, and then tends to fade in, you know, after a couple months. So what are you doing to take care of yourself then in the coming months and years? That's a question that's important, but it's kind of more of like triage at the beginning, usually.
I love that you mentioned underwhelm because that's something that I tend to not associate with a stress response. And so when you mentioned underwhelmed, I just like, that's what I do. I just shut down. If it gets to be too much, I'm just like, okay, everything is fine. It's just totally numb. And the idea of not feeling and not being attuned to what's going on with you, being disconnected from yourself, I really did not associate that with a stress response. So I'm really glad you brought up underwhelm. That is a really good point.
Yeah, and it can be a scary feeling too, if it's one you're not used to, or and you're like, wait, whoa, what's happening? And it's grief, and you know, we change through it, and it's a very different experience than some of those day-to-day emotions.
Yeah, one thing that's becoming that I'm aware of in my current situation with my people that I care about is friends and loved ones who are dying. And it's not a big shock. It's coming. You know, it's coming. They've been, you know, diagnosed with terminal cancer, or they've decided that, you know, they're done fighting. And so you're given that news. And that has got to be, I imagine, a different kind of stress, where you know the person is going to be leaving your life, but you don't know when. And it tends to make things more important, or it, from my experience. And that's what I'm experiencing right now with my loved ones. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how that shows up in grief counseling and in grief coaching, in your knowledge about grief.
Yes, it's actually, there's a term for it, and it's anticipatory, right? You're awaiting something to happen, and it's something that's very significant, right? And so really, just I like to think about and play around with that word, awaiting. When we're awaiting something that might be sad or hard, what typically comes up for the listener when I say that? What comes up, you know, for you thinking about that, LaShawn? And maybe you can answer that here in a second. But like awaiting, there's so much unknown on top of unknown. And already unknown can be a stressor for many people. So then you compound that with additional unknown, and it can be just overwhelming, right? Or like I said, underwhelming. There can be the shock and numbing too. And then there can be all the questions, you know, how do I want to relate to this person? How often can I see this individual? You know, what do I want to give them? What do I want to share with them? What words do I want to take down that they're saying? You know, all of these kind of more nuanced tasks that are adding to your typical day-to-day will likely add in a little bit more stress, right? Because we're already tapped for time or those sorts of things. So there is going to be, you know, maybe a little bit more stress if that's how people are relating. Some people are like, I just going to avoid this. I don't want to deal with this. This isn't going to happen, you know, and those sorts of things too. So it's just across the spectrum in terms of how people relate to anticipatory loss. But I think just acknowledging it in society, right? Like we have bereavement leave at work. Maybe if you lose a loved one by death, we don't really have that for anticipatory grieving and loss. And that time can be very precious too, right? And very needed. So taking care of yourself during that time. And I'm not even going to go into if you're a caretaker of the individual, because that's another kind of thing. But just, you know, as a friend or family member, how are you getting the sleep that you need? And the, you know, food and water, plenty of water, right? And those sorts of things as you anticipate this loss. And then taking care of your emotional needs, right? Sometimes that might mean more reflection. Other times it might mean less reflection. Sometimes it might mean having more therapy or coaching sessions or that sort of thing. Sometimes it might mean a little bit less during that time. So just like we started out with the stress concept of really just asking yourself, what do you really need? And listening to yourself. Don't deny that in those days and months leading up to the anticipated loss of a loved one, because that voice is telling you something that can be very powerful and helpful to you.
Well, I think that's so important to keep in mind. As you know, we had mentioned at the beginning, it's complex, as so many of the topics that we touch on in this podcast are. I think it just really touches on the fact that this is not an easy thing. And it's, I think it's easy to say, oh, it's stress, you know, just deal with it. Or, oh, you know, you're overwhelmed, but, you know, compare yourself to the way other people are responding to the same thing. So we don't want to get into that trap of comparing ourselves to others. I think one of the main themes in this discussion has been, this is an individual thing. It's how we all as individuals deal with maybe similar situations. We're going to deal with them differently. We're going to be affected by them differently. And there's no right or wrong way to react to something. And there is no right or wrong way to soothe yourself or to process what you're going through. So we really want to silence or say to that voice in our head, that self-critical voice in our head that in positive intelligence we call the judge. You're a liar. I'm not listening to you. I'm going to focus on something else. So we don't really want to fall into that trap of comparing to others or thinking that we're wrong or bad or something is wrong with us because of the way that we are responding to stress or the way that stress is affecting our lives. And we are in the coaching nugget space of the episode. I guess I'll go ahead and say what I was going to say about the coaching nugget. And I really just want to say that when we are dealing with stress, I would encourage you to definitely listen to your body, listen to the signals that your body is sending to you about your situation and things that you may want to address or look at, and where possible, avoid isolation in stressful situations. See where you can call on the people you trust and the people you care about to be there for you. Erin?
That is such wise advice. I like what you said. Both of those are key to stress. I think being okay and a little bit bold. We talked about bold in the one episode. I think you brought that up about trying something a little bit different when you're recognizing how you typically respond to stress isn't working. So just make a small tweak, a small adjustment, and really try to focus on how you can integrate that change into your day-to-day. So if it typically isn't working for you, it's probably worth making a switch.
Thanks for joining us for Coaching as Benevolence. I'm LaShawn with Maychelle Sage Place, Positive Intelligence Coaching.
And I'm Erin with Roots and Wings, Grief and Loss Coaching.
Have a benevolent day.